Welcome back to the Tag Sustainability Talk podcast. In this episode, we have the second part of our nuclear energy discussion where Rick Wren joins Nick Irvin from Southern Company's R&D group. Together, they dive into the world of advanced nuclear technologies. Nick shares insights on the challenges and opportunities in the nuclear industry, the need for skilled labor, and the potential for AI and robotics to revolutionize the field. Join us as we discuss how these advancements can enhance energy security, reduce costs, and create a sustainable future for all.
You mentioned something about licensing that I think is absolutely worth discussing and dissecting further. Talk a little bit about, if you don't mind, the challenges with that. Not only the challenges, so to speak, how things are improving and optimizing moving forward.
Yeah, so licensing and particularly having a strong regulatory body on the other side is really important for the industry. I think as an industry, we have found NRC to be a great partner and a constructive partner. If you look back at the Vogtle lessons learned, one of the glaring things that was there was the first of a kind for us and first of a kind for them to regulate a nuclear reactor under the Part 52 licensing process. And so we both learned, but it was a constructive environment. And if you look at the progress we made from 3 to 4, there was a significant acceleration in closing out of the regulatory process at the end of that project that demonstrated that they learned along with us. And so with that as a platform going forward, I think we've also seen a very strong partnership with the NRC on the licensing of advanced reactors. We've been working for 7 or 8 years now in partnership with DOE, but in coordination with the NRC on developing something we call a risk-informed performance-based approach, which really is aimed at this idea of an advanced reactor space. How do I allow the regulation, number one, to reflect the benefit of the physics that we talked about earlier? But number two, given that there are uncertainties there, how do I create a regulatory process that's systematic in nature that grows and learns with the learning of the technology? So as an example, if I did an early stage license, you know, maybe a first of a kind on a new technology with this risk-informed performance-based, I might have more layers because the analysis says I need more layers or I need more engineering systems. But as performance is demonstrated and as I grow the technology and learn with technology, it provides a systematic way for us to continue to optimize the plant's cost and performance. And the NRC has worked very closely with us on that. There's been several papers that have been approved by them. Several of the advanced reactor developers are using our sort of format of how we approach that problem. And so we're really excited about where that could take us as an industry, because what we really need is a predictable regulatory environment that allows us to structure projects around this sort of predictable outcome. We can manage cost. We can get the units online in a way that serves the needs of our customers.
Totally understood. So the checks and balances portion of safety and involvement of the NRC is definitely a good thing in the industry right now. What can be improved and what all parties are working on to improve is what to expect when over the course of the process.
That's right. I think that's a good way to say it, yeah.
Understood. I mean, I know there's progress being made there. As far as advanced nuclear goes, as far as these Gen 4 reactors go, what needs to be streamlined in order to make type of reactors more market ready, so to speak, ready for commercialization?
Well, one of the big things that the Department of Energy is working on right now to support this entire industry is high assay, low enriched uranium. Our existing light water fleet uses what we just call low enriched uranium, which is up to around 5% enrichment. This is fissile material. U-235 versus U-238 is in the fuel. Most of these advanced reactors are going to want a higher level of enrichments, something in the 10, maybe 15% range. That's a capability that we don't currently have. DOE is supporting that. There's several companies that are standing up that manufacturing. That's going to be really, really important as we demonstrate these technologies. And if we ever want to get to where we're deploying tens of them, having that domestic capability is going to be really important. I think beyond that, just as an industry, but specifically in the nuclear sector, we need lots of young folks who want to build things and weld And getting the trades, we experience that at Vogel with workforce and the challenges of having skilled labor. With the build out that we're having that we mentioned earlier in the data center world, we're seeing some of that manifest itself again. And as you look to the future, as we reindustrialize, or as we build out this industrial plant, the power sector in particular, and nuclear, that high quality craft labor, those skilled laborers are going to be in high demand. And I just don't think we can get enough of them. So when I think about it, those are the couple of big things on my list to figure out how to tackle to make advanced nuclear work really well.
I hear that often with regards to skilled labor, and I don't think nuclear is the only facet of the production industry that suffers from that. So essentially, steps forward here in order to help things out, streamline development. Of course, it has to do with more predictability with the permitting process, which of course you're getting very good collaboration with the bureaucratic parties that be, so to speak. Of course, enhancing our domestic
high assay,
low enriched uranium. We're going to have to build out the domestic capabilities. And please correct me if I'm wrong, Nick. I do remember not too long ago, there was only one body on the planet that could do this high assay, low enriched uranium. And I think they were a state-sponsored company out of Russia.
Yes, that's directionally correct. I wouldn't hold myself to it being the only one, but yes, that's directionally correct.
No, understood. So building that out from a domestic standpoint, and then, of course, workforce training. Yeah. Something that everybody could benefit from. Aside from, again, fuel production and enrichment, improvements in the predictability of the permitting process, and of course, labor capabilities, are there any other potential hiccups or obstacles that are worth enumerating on moving forward in the development of advanced nuclear?
Yeah, this is maybe a personal philosophy, but I think we have to be very sensitive. This stuff takes time. The nuclear industry is still young, but it does take time. And these are complex systems. And so one of the things I do worry about sometimes is we get caught up in the momentum and we just have to keep doing the right things on a daily basis. And so sometimes you see these flash in the pan technology companies or these ideas, and I'm all for a crazy idea. I'm an R&D guy. But I think we have to hold ourselves accountable. My standard deadline is like, you have to work the problem. And if we think we can skip steps on working the problem, we're going to find ourselves in a mess. And so that's a very generic answer, but I don't think it can be said often enough is these things take time. There's a right way to do it. I know at Southern Company, we're over a 100-year-old company. We want to be in a productive environment. We want to move fast, but we're not going to move fast and sacrifice the commitment to our customers, the commitment to quality and affordability. We're going to take the time to do it right. I worry sometimes with sort of newcomers to the scene. There is healthy tension, but sometimes maybe we get too caught up in trying to go fast and break rules when what we should just do is work the problem.
So as an R&D guy, you kind of got to be a bit of a gambler, right? Mm-hmm. But you got to take the informed risk.
That's right.
Risks from the gambling standpoint.
That's exactly right.
Dot your I's, cross your T's. That has to be a component here as we're, again, innovating in the nuclear space.
Innovating in nuclear is not innovating in software. This is hardware. This is infrastructure, physics, math, chemistry still matter a lot. So we got to do it right.
So you can't break things and ask for forgiveness later.
Well, no, you still have to break things. But you want to break things in a controlled environment. We have to break and learn, that's for sure. But you want to break it in a way that is controlled and safe and in a place that's designed to learn and not just randomly do it. Yeah.
So Nick, fast forward here. 10-ish years. Everything goes, roughly speaking, according to plan, and we have first commercial deployments of these molten chloride fast reactors available for the U.S. What does that landscape look like? We talked about maritime, of course. They're going to be a strong potential player. I'm sure, of course, there's some CNI opportunities, Dow Chemical, with these high-pressure gas reactors, non-light water reactors. Of course, grid scale, utility scale generators, data centers. What else is worth talking about? What else is worth fleshing out?
I think success in that world, what it really fundamentally means is we've enhanced the quality of life of every customer in the country. And so to me, the opportunity that sits there is what would it look like to not be limited on your access to electricity, or to have the cost of electricity on a inflation adjusted terms actually go down? What would it look like to have a shipyard in the East Coast that's building these machines, that's the center of an industrial base, that at least for me growing up in the South, the transition from the steel industry to the auto industry was enormous, and what the auto industry brought in terms of great jobs, you know, for everybody and my family and all the families around me. So I think, to me, we have an opportunity through this technology development, not only to make our business better, but to create opportunity for an entirely different set of even unimaginable businesses to grow up on the back of low-cost energy. And that's a very exciting thing for me. I'm very encouraged by that. And frankly, it motivates me to do the work that I do every day. So I don't predict the future. I would just say that I think all things get better when we deliver new solutions for energy supply. And that's very exciting.
So it's not so much a application-driven focus as it is a widespread option for energy abundance and energy security. Those are two big keywords I hear a lot today in the energy space. And this, what looks like these advanced nuclear reactors, can help deliver energy abundance, decarbonization, of course, and energy security.
I couldn't agree more. Yep.
Oh, love it. Love it. Love it. So you mentioned something here worth fleshing out. What drives you here is the ability to do all the above.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other technologies beyond just nuclear that you get excited to hear about? Or indeed, Guy, you like the new stuff, of course, as long as everyone's doing their due diligence appropriately. Anything else worth mentioning?
It's the buzzword of the day, but I do think the emergence of, you know, AI, whatever we call it right now, it's large language models. But if you just want to put it, air quotes, AI, and the ability that it has to reduce friction in our ecosystems, in any ecosystem, right? It's making transactions that much more efficient, giving access to information even more than in the palm of your hand, like never before. I think that's another one of those examples of creating abundance. Abundant information, I think, will yield lots and lots of new endeavors. I think I'm really interested to see how that evolves in the world of robotics. And there's, again, the software world, the digital world, but then that transition into the physical world, going back to everything from the use of robotics in hazardous environments where we make people safer, to do things like that we need to do every day in an industrial plant, to just improving the quality of life through robotics in people's everyday life, if it's your home helper robot or your automatic driving robot. I don't think we can quite understand yet how that might open up an entirely different world of joy, of fun, of lived experience for people. And that's really exciting. It's a little scary. I still have a little Terminator in me back there. I was a kid of the 80s, but I think it's more exciting than it is scary. And I think it's hard to imagine what that could do for us as a society.
And to tie that in with nuclear, plug the growing, burgeoning analytical capabilities of AI with the dexterity, mechanical capabilities of robotics, and an environment like nuclear, you have the ability just to streamline operations, functionality, capabilities. It looks like there's already some steps forward being made on that front.
Yeah, a lot of those guys are entering into this conversation on how to optimize constructability to make it more predictable on the front end. I think on the backside, it might be, what if in 20 years from now, we've progressed to the point where we have self-assembling power plants, where I have developed robotics to the point where I can do remote maintenance, but then maybe that remote maintenance becomes the thing that built it, especially if I'm delivering modules and I'm delivering large components that maybe are manufactured in a shipyard, but this thing is sort of a self-building edge case. I was on a call a few weeks ago with some folks who were looking at space-based solar, and they had like a little Wally robot. It had a little environment where behind some glass walls, they were self-erecting solar panel frames, and they were literally planning to do that in space. Space-based solar is a little crazy to me. It's interesting with people dropping the cost of payloads. I mean, these kinds of things are very intriguing. I won't be on the first flight to Mars, but I think those kinds of goals are really the kind of thing that pushes forward as a society. So they're exciting.
I'm not going to be on that flight either. So yeah. Don't worry about Nick.
Yeah, for sure.
We can camp out here on Earth.
That's right. I'm good. I'll stay back.
We're talking about some of the potential promises of advanced nuclear, lower costs, optimizing delivery, all that kind of stuff, performance safety. Is there any type of cost thresholds that are being targeted or that parties are believing are optimistic?
In terms of cost, we always have cost goals, but bottom line is, how do we create a technology path that is better for the customers? And we'll make the decisions along the way. Sometimes you have to abandon a technology, and that's the best decision for the customer. But we certainly want to work towards ultimately putting, you know, as much downward pressure on the cost of electricity as possible for the benefit of the customer. So a lot of moving parts and costs, a lot of speculation, but the end game is, how do we make the right decision for affordability?
Makes total sense. Just one more question for you, Nick. I think we've had a great, engaging conversation today. Given your expertise, given your position here at the new frontier of the nuclear, is there anything else you'd like to mention that we didn't cover already in terms of advanced nuclear moving forward?
I always try to bring it back to, all of this sort of begins and ends with people. Just like it takes a big village to do the kind of work that I'm speaking to you about today, it ultimately is for the benefit of the customers we serve. And making sure we have that engagement and understanding why we do what we do, make sure people are in the right headspace, motivated, all those types of things, because this is hard work. And then equally on the other side, as our customers see this work coming along, making sure that they engage, understand, learn about the science, understand the issues. Ultimately, we're all just trying to figure out, how do we make this place a little bit better and serve each other a little bit better? And so the people part of, to me, is the most important part. I think this is an industry full of extremely passionate, high energy, motivated people who are really trying to do fundamentally good work to serve humankind. That's very exciting. And so for those of you out there listening, I would just encourage you, like, engage, learn, find those people, seek it out, get educated. It helps us as the folks doing the work. But I think the more we talk about it, the more we learn, the more we have an informed public, the more benefit it ultimately delivers to our societies. Yeah, the people part, earning, engaging, just continuing to help us drive it forward, the piece that is probably the end game.
I love that. So again, guidance that for the general listener today, get involved. Try to understand what's going on. This is important stuff. Without external energy sources, the society we know and love would crumble.
Exactly.
I love that guidance, Nick. Absolutely love it. So it has been a pleasure to speak with you today, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time and your insights. Certainly best of luck moving forward with Southern Company and these new Gen 4 reactors. Looking forward to learning and reading about your progress moving forward and getting involved when and where I can.
All right, great. Well, I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the TAG Sustainability Talk Podcast. We hope you find our discussions both enlightening and inspiring. More information about becoming a member of the Technology Association of Georgia, Georgia's largest technology association, and to access exclusive content and events, please visit tagonline.org. While you're there, you can visit the Society's page and check out our list of upcoming events or pick up a copy of the latest ecosystem report. If you'd like to get in touch with us or learn more about the Society, please reach out through the TAG Smart Communities and Sustainability Society page on LinkedIn. Until next time, keep learning and pushing towards a more sustainable future.